No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype your questions in at BBS Radio 1. We don't have a guest tonight, so it's just me and Kathleen. So I hope you call in and join the conversation, because you know how Kathleen likes to take over things, and I don't get to talk much, so we want to hear from you. Again, the number is 888-628-6008. Before I go any further, let me introduce my co-host Kathleen, who is leaving Washington again for the land of Oz. We're going to miss her, and this is her last show from D.C. for a while. I don't understand why she keeps on going to Kansas when the wizard is right here. Hey, Kathleen, are you out there?
Yes, Senator Brown, happy Father's Day, because I know you are a father. And I actually
I'd be called a mother too, you know.
I was trying to be nice, but you know how it goes. But yes, happy Father's Day, and happy Father's Day to my dad, Dr. Michael Gomez in Douglas,
greatest man in the world. Dr. Mike, happy Father's Day.
Who's only had so much joy and pleasure from having two daughters, especially me, the oldest, and having three grandkids, Isabella, Diego, and Mateo. But a shout out to him on Father's Day, and, you know, just thanks a lot for everything, Dad. And to all the dads out there who do everything they do every day to keep the family together and, you know, and love their family. I mean, we need moms and dads, and we can't do without them, so... Just a shout out to all those dads out there. Great job you're doing.
And especially Bernie. Bernie is so to my father-in-law. He raised six great kids. So happy Father, Bernie.
Yes. Yeah. To all of them. To all those dads and all the men out there who will be dads or are dads. And, you know, there's so many kids that need to be mentored. So if you haven't had a kid and you have that desire, go and check out the Boys and the Boys Club. And, I mean, there's just so many Big Brothers, there's so many organizations that need men to help guide our young men today. So a shout out to everybody. Yes, I'm going to Kansas. I decided I needed to go back to Mid-America, which was once the flyover states. You know, you just flew over them. But, you know, it's interesting. They're becoming, you know, that area is kind of growing a lot because you can't afford big cities. You can't afford to live in San Diego or San Francisco or L.A., and you can't afford to live in D.C. and, you know, and New York, and I don't know if Philadelphia's getting expensive, but it seems like all the big cities are getting very expensive to live in, and now you got to look at other parts of the country. So I'm actually going to Kansas, have friends there. I'm going to check it out, get in touch with Mid-America, get out of the Beltway and out of the D.C. thinking and into what's happening in the rest of America. So I'll be keeping you in check, Mr. Senator Brown. Make sure that you understand what the rest of the country's thinking.
Well, you know, I mean, that's an interesting point you bring up right there, Kathleen, that, you know, when I was growing up back in the Stone Age, people were moving out of the cities and into the suburbs. And then they started moving back into the cities again not only for jobs, but for the economics of owning a car, right? It got expensive to own a car, and gas was expensive. And you know, you and I see all these little, what do they call them? Cars to go.
Car to go. I rented some.
Yeah. Sometimes I pull up in front of my house, there's like five of them, you know. And luckily, they all fit into two parking spaces because they're so small. But, you know, it's interesting to see if the you know, maybe we should do a show on this, whether the hard economic times are actually driving people out to the suburbs again, and we will repopulate more of the rural areas and and, you know, cause a more of a balance that way. You know, and also transportation is getting better. You know, it's getting better in the city and also in the suburbs.
And I'm really amazed, although I really have a problem with the metro in D.C. because it's so freaking expensive. You know, New York, the metro.
And it's falling apart. You know, that's another thing. It's falling apart.
But, boy, I tell you, Mateo, my son, was out here visiting, and we were at the aerospace, and we managed to take the bus from there all the way to your house, which you got a great bus stop right outside your front door. And it was wonderful. I mean, it was just so good. And between Car to Go and the metro and the bus and Uber, I mean, you don't really need a car.
Right. And, you know, in Chicago, it's funny. We went to, and here's a shout out to Trisha Brown. I think we shouted out to her once before, but I'm so proud on Father's Day to tell America that she graduated. My oldest daughter graduated from DePaul University with honors. But we were out there in Chicago, and we could barely get around because the traffic was so bad. Trisha's 22 years old and does not have a driver's license. And she said when she was in the car with us and we were driving around, I'm never going to drive in this city, ever. You know, she really, and they have a really good transportation system, but she relies on the L and the buses and you know, the occasional Uber cab. They call it something else out there, but it's the same kind of system. So, yeah. Maybe we'll see a repop. Maybe you'll start a new movement to Kansas.
Well, you know, it's interesting because every time I turn around, someone's mentioning something about Kansas. I have relatives that got jobs out of companies in Kansas, and then I have friends who have moved to Kansas. And I remember asking one of Diego's friends who's going to be graduating in a year, and I said, where are you going to go? Are you going to go? He actually lives in the San Francisco area. I said, are you going to move back to San Francisco? Are you thinking of New York? Where are you thinking of living? And he's like Ohio. And I said, Ohio? He goes, that's probably all I can afford after the loans that I've taken out to pay for my education. I've got to go to some place like that. I can't afford to live in a major urban pop, you know, area. And I thought, man, that is so sad. But, you know, that's kind of the economics for these guys. They come out. I think I heard in the news that this year is the highest amount of debt that college students will graduate. And I think the minimum kind of was $36,000. And yeah, $36,000. Geez, that's, you know, that's a lot. That's at least $700, and then you're going to be paying for rent and cars and all that. So they don't even see the chance of living in a vibrant urban city. They realize to make ends meet, they're going to have to go out to places like Ohio and Kansas and, you know, Oklahoma and those areas. So it's kind
well,
of, it's
you
very
know,
different.
Which, yeah, I got out of school and I put myself through college and through graduate school. And I got out after graduate school, I got out with a $2,000 debt. And those were for loans where I was given a scholarship as well. So I got a scholarship that gave me $2,000 to go to school. And I was required to take a $2,000 NDSL loan out along with it. So before I even started, I broke even. And then I think I paid like 1.5% interest a year after I got out of graduate school. So I had the money for like 5 years before I paid it back. And it was I'm not sure how much it was, but it was less than $100 a month. So, you know, it was a great program. Unfortunately, many of those loans were defaulting on. Certainly it was way more reasonable. Now to get a Bachelor of Arts degree, you know, a liberal arts degree, as Diego pointed out, is not necessarily the you know, something that you can make a lot of money with. In fact, I've read articles that say that the most valuable degrees are an Associate of Arts degree and a Master's degree. So in other words, what it costs you to get an Associate of Arts degree is worth what you pay for it many times over, and what you pay for a Master's degree is also worth it in terms of additional salaries. But having a Bachelor's degree, not so much anymore, and that's right. that's really a shame. I don't know what kind of world we're leaving our children, but they shouldn't
world.
Be that much in debt. And we're going to do another show on it. Let's see if yes. we can, you know, we've had shows on it before, and we both, I think, agree with Senator Warren that we, you know, you shouldn't loan money to banks at a lower rate than you loan money to students.
Right.
So we'll continue to work on that. But, you know, this show, one of the main issues that we discussed on this show, and one of the reasons for creating it, was to talk about the struggle for statehood for the District of Columbia. So let me just run down real quickly what's been going on. There hasn't been a whole lot going on. As our listeners probably know, we have a statehood bill in front of Congress in the House right now, and we have 120 co-sponsors. That hasn't changed in many weeks. Bill is H.R. 317. It would give the District of Columbia, would make District of Columbia the 51st state. We have 120 co-sponsors, all Democrats, which is really distressing. Not one Republican believes evidently in the right of the people of District of Columbia to be equal. The latest news is that Senator Carper, and this isn't new, this really isn't news. It's been out there for a while, but we're getting closer and closer. Senator Carper of Delaware plans to introduce a companion legislation piece in the Senate within the next week or so, before the July 4th recess. And we estimate now that we have 10 to 12 Senate co-sponsors. You know, you won't actually know until that happens. But this week, in that regard, the House has again attacked the District of Columbia. We're now struggling over budget autonomy, which would give the right of would give the people of Washington D.C. the right to spend their own tax money without the approval. Well, actually, it would still have to be approved by Congress, but it would prohibit. Would take away the right of Congress to interfere with how we spend our money. They would either approve it or not approve it, like any other law. So it's really kind of budget semi-autonomy. And we've come to kind of a showdown where our mayor says that she's going to implement a new budget. And Congress this week, several congressmen said, no, you're not. It's a violation of the law, which we believe. I believe it is a violation of the Home Rule Charter. So we'll see what happens there, and that controversy goes on. Meanwhile, Congress has launched a new attack on the D.C. budget for 2016. They've put on riders, which are these attachments to our budget, and one of the reasons we want autonomy. One of the riders says that we can't spend locally generated tax money on certain benefits, health benefits for poor women. Another rider says that we can't make any laws to implement Initiative 71, which is the marijuana referendum that passed in the District of Columbia and makes marijuana legal, personal consumption of marijuana legal. We can't pass any laws to regulate it or to tax it or anything else. So it's like the wild, wild west out here for the next couple of years maybe on marijuana. And that's something that concerns a lot of people. And then there was a third bill which says that you can't discriminate against women for their birth control choices, no matter who you are. And, you know, we think of the Holly Lobby decision of the Supreme Court, it says that, you know, if women choose to take birth control pills or they choose alternative methods of birth control, you can't discriminate against them. They put a rider on the bill that says that will not take effect as well. So, you know, this is some, and meanwhile, and I want to move on to this subject in a minute with you, is gun control. They're also working on legislation to interfere with their gun laws in District Columbia. So I want America to know this affects all of us. If you're a woman, the things they're passing in the District of Columbia against poor women and against women's right to choose affects everybody. If you believe that there are too many guns on the street, they're attacking our gun laws. They're also attacking referendum that have been legally passed by the voters of the District of Columbia. So as Dr. King said, injustice anywhere affects justice everywhere, impacts justice everywhere, and that's true. So that's what's going on. So Kathleen,
it's very sad state of affairs, because I mean, in all the rhetoric that I've heard about the Republicans, is that they believe in states' rights and they believe in letting people define what they are. And it just is amazing to me that when it comes to the District of Columbia, that they feel that these people, and I mean, I'm always amazed at you guys. I think there's the sign that's in front of the Wilson Building says you, as of this year, have paid $1.5 billion in local taxes. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. That's more money than a lot of states sometimes, you know? $1.5 billion. And if I understand that, that's in the District of Columbia that they have paid that tax, right? $1.5 billion.
That's for federal taxes.
Federal taxes.
Okay. That's what we paid. Federal taxes, and that you haven't seen the sign in a few weeks because it's even gone up. You know, I think we pay about $6 or $7 billion a year in taxes, which is more than 12 other states pay. And you hit the nail on the head. The irony of everything is the fact that these Republicans stand out there and constantly spew this rhetoric about states' rights and how the federal government shouldn't interfere with what the states want to do. And here in Washington, they interfere with everything. So, yeah, it really is hypocritical. And
it's, what is the common comment when they're asked that is because they can. And that's to me like a bully. You know, a bully does things because he can. You know, because the people are, he has somehow some kind of leverage of power, whether he be bigger in size or his father's the principal or, you know, I mean, both bullies are both come in male and female forms, but it just seems to be such a bully thing to do to people. And they love it because there's actually this, it seems to be that they love the fact that there's this group of people that they can just do whatever they want to with, and it's acceptable.
Yes, and you know what? That's another thing, good comment that you make on the situation, is that we really don't have control here, but we also don't have the right constituency. You know, people in California and Arizona and Nevada and Texas and New York may feel our pain, but they really don't have a dog in this fight. It really only affects us. So we have a small constituency in dealing with these people, and we don't elect any of them. And that's a problem, you know. Right. If you want to be mean to us, like Rick Perry, who, you know, was one of the people that started one of these riders, if you want to be mean to us, one, you can make points with conservatives by taking a very conservative position in a liberal jurisdiction like the District of Columbia. And two, there's really no fallout for you. Nobody's going to vote against you in Texas on the basis of what you do to the people of Washington, D.C., unfortunately. And we need to find a way to ramp that up and get them.
Maybe it's because we don't have colonies anymore. Like you all from here say, this is the last colony. A lot of these guys, I think, like to think that they're colonists. You know, that they're kind of like the master of their little domain. And so it enables them to do that and play that role. I don't know.
Well, since you bring up the the slave master mentality, I guess that's a good segue to the biggest tragedy of the week, and that's certainly what happened in a church in Charleston, where nine people were killed and several were severely wounded. And I assume that this offends most Americans the way it offends me, that you know, not only was this just a horrific crime by a racist and obvious psychopath, but it happened inside a church. It happened inside a church.
Well, that he sat at for an hour, too. Remember, he was there for an hour praying with them before he decided to kill them, which is even scarier, I think.
Scarier, yes.
To sit there.
That you could sit there and look at these people. And, of course, when you read their bios, you know, they were moms and students, and one of them was a librarian. And, you know, obviously, they were always all you know, if you read about them, you'll see what good people, what decent kind of regular lives they were leading. Meanwhile, this guy who was 21 years old and had nothing but hate in his heart, you know, perpetrated this terrible and horrific crime. And one of the scarier parts for me on Father's Day is that his father's the guy that bought him the gun.
Right.
You know,
I mean, do you buy it? And that's the question. You know, I have a lot of friends, as you know, who's all against gun control. And once again, they were on Facebook. Here's going to be the opportunity for the liberals and progressives to whine about gun control and guns kill people. But, you know, we have to somewhat be responsible. I don't know what you do now because there's just so many guns. But like you've mentioned before, you should do it like cars, and they always, then they go in, I'm sorry, I kind of got off the point, but they were whining about, oh, all the liberals and progressives are going to whine about, you know, guns kill people, well, cars kill people, and planes kill people, well, then, cars are registered, they're licensed, you have to take care of them, you get insurance, so that if you injure somebody else, you know, they have a way in which to pay for their bills, and I did write back, you know, to one of my friends who's such a, he just starts getting, you know, foam coming out of his mouth when you talk about gun control. But he didn't respond to that. When I said, okay, you know, you don't want gun control, well, then let's license it, let's insure it, you know, just like you would a car.
And you know what? If you had insurance, you would keep track of your gun. You'd be more careful about it, right? Because you'd be liable, or your insurance company, you'd be liable if something happened with it. And I don't understand why we can't do the same things, not because guns kill people, if you want to make the argument that guns don't kill people, people do, but because of the potential they have to kill people. And cars are actually designed for a totally different purpose than killing. But guns are really designed to kill. Now, you can go out and target shoot with them and practice with them and do other things with them. But really, the primary purpose of a gun is to kill. And I was trained to use a gun when I was a kid. And that's the first rule they teach you. Do not point this at anything you don't plan to kill. If Don't take it lightly. Don't point it at anything that you're not going to shoot at. And that's like the first rule of gun safety. And it just shows you that that's what the purpose of a gun is. And we need to get tougher, you know. And what you're talking about with insurance and other stuff, which is a great idea. Man, we're just trying to get the guns out of it. We can't even get the guns out of the hands of the crazy people.
Well, when you think about it, my son has my car in California, but I have insurance on it. And what's the first thing I say to him? You know, I say, listen, this is my car. And if you kill somebody or hurt somebody, you know, I'm going to lose everything unless, you know, you have to abide by the law. So it's funny how our cars, we realize, can kill other families or other people in them. And we're very cautious about, in theory, who we lend your car to. You know, you don't just lend it to anybody. You lend it to somebody you feel is going to be somewhat responsible and won't crash it. Because otherwise, you know how expensive and how terrible and all the terrible things that can happen. So how come we can't think about that when we give our kid a gun, or we lend somebody a gun, or we make it easy for someone to get a gun. You know, it's kind of just such a disconnection from what, like you say, guns' purposes are, is to, well, they'll say to protect themselves, but in protecting yourselves, you're going to, you know, kill someone. And I don't know if I told a story on, did I tell on the radio show about what happened to Diego and the young girl he helped? I can't remember if I told that story.
And that was a scary incident.
Now, I don't know if my parents are listening, but, you know, it was okay. I didn't want to get you all crazy, but I get a call at 4:30 in the, about 7:30 my time here in D.C., and I know it's from my son, and it's 4:30 in the morning, so I said, oh, my gosh, nothing's good going to come out of it. So, of course, I thought he crashed the car. But what had happened is I had always taught Diego that if he's at a party and he sees a young girl who's really drunk, very trash, can't take care of herself, not to leave her there if he knew her. You know, or if he, you know, to help get her some ride or somewhere home, because, you know, I've been at fraternity parties back in my day, and when girls got in that situation, it was never a good thing. So actually,
other girl, let's point
other girls.
Out.
Of course,
other
me,
girl.
I was never like that. I was never in that situation. So they're at a party and they're all partying, and this girl has a tendency to drink too much, a friend of his, and she got very, very drunk. And they were on campus, and everyone was going to stay at somebody's house, but he didn't feel that she should stay in his, you know, in his apartment. He's got his roommates there. She wanted to go home, so he decided he didn't want to put her in a taxi because she was so drunk. He didn't want to get that chance where something would happen to her. So he took her home, got her. Actually, I think they stopped at McDonald's, got her home. They, you know, got her into the house, you know, helped her to her room. She laid down, totally trashed. She gets, so, you know, he says, "I, mommy," I just opened the door. She fell on the bed. I turned. I walked outside. And as I'm outside the door and I make sure it's locked, I call, try to call her friend, because I was even concerned about leaving her like that alone in the house, because everyone was gone, all her roommates, that something might happen to her. So I'm trying to get a hold of her friend, and all of a sudden I hear this huge crash. I mean, this is not a crash. It's just like a bang. And he goes, and he goes, "I had a key." So I open the door again. I run in, and he goes, and I smell something like really weird. Like, and he goes, "I realize it's gunfire. It's smoke from a gunshot." And as he goes in to where her room was, he's thinking something happened to her. She's standing there with a gun. She had been so drunk that she heard a noise. She heard him leaving and was so trashed she hadn't realized he had brought her home. So she grabbed her gun. With, what do they call the bullets that explode as they hit you?
Hollow point bullets.
Yes, that's what she was using for bullets, and had gotten up and gone the hallway, and she just fired her gun down the hallway, and it went into the door of her bedroom's, I mean, her roommate's bedroom, and not even in the direction, thank God, because she could have shot right through the front door, and he was standing there. And I was like, I said, why would she want hollow point bullets? Why would she? Because you might have a chance to recover if you'd gotten shot by a regular bullet. Maybe she'd gone through your shoulder, but those things explode. So what was the purpose? Her father probably thought she's going away to college. You know, they're thinking, she's going to get raped, so he's going to give her this gun and these bullets. And, you know, I told you the story. I wanted to call her and tell her what would have happened to me. I would have made her life miserable. She would have changed not only my life, but her life for the rest of her life, because I would never let her forget that she shot my son when he had helped her. And then I said, my gosh, does she even helped her? You know, but that's how scary it is. He goes, Mom, even I like guns. I can't believe she shot at a sound. So I said, well, what are your friends going to do about this? Because they're lucky that her roommates were lucky that they weren't there. And I said, well, what are you going to do? And he says, well, I'm not going to be around her anymore. We all told her that she drank too much, and she was going to buy a safety box for her gun so she could lock it and only get to it if she was cognizant. But see, this is what society has become. And I thought, it's amazing that something like that could happen.
Well, you know, and the truth of the matter is that I read some of the emails from that person you were talking about earlier that talked about people whining. I can't believe you would use a word like whining over that tragedy in Charleston, but how liberals were going to whine against it and how this was going to make women unsafe and susceptible to rape and other things. But the truth of the matter is that more people are killed accidentally in the kind of situations that you're describing and other situations like children playing with guns. More people are killed that way than are ever killed in defense of a home or defense of their person. So that's just just crazy.
And you know, we have Taboo is on line one. Taboo, okay. Are you there?
Hey, Taboo, are you there?
Good Father's Day to you.
Hey.
Thanks, Taboo. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. You know,
good.
But I was listening to you as you were so eloquently speaking, and I want to thank you for doing that and giving you a little brief lesson on the purpose of a gun. You know, I mean, I was taught that as well, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something you just don't, it's nothing to play with. It's harmful and should be used appropriately. But speaking of the purpose of the gun, and you were speaking to the man down in South Carolina, I think I would like to hear you talk a little bit about, if you choose to, the purpose of him coming there, the purpose of killing them. So in this sense, it wasn't a gun so much. He could have used dynamite or match or whatever. But his purpose was to kill them. So I guess I want to ask, is this anything new? Did the Civil War really end? You know, but his purpose for killing the people, I think, is what I like to hear our people talk about a lot more, because my question is this anything new?
Well, you know what? Wait.
You make a perfect point. Yeah.
I just wanted to say one thing, and this is, I think, why people don't talk about Taboo. Why? Because it's a very disturbing subject, and Michael and I got in a big discussion about this. I feel that you're going to have to really look at what's happening to the white young men in our society now. You know, they always, maybe 40 years ago, they had it, everything, right? They got whatever they wanted. They got the jobs. They got the education. But there is a group of white, and I would say this guy's father probably was part of that, that maybe because they're uneducated, maybe because they're in poor areas, there's something going on there that is just creating more hatred and more of a disconnection with the rest of the society. And I think we need to address it. And it's a very, to kind of use your name, it's a very taboo thing. Nobody wants to talk about the disenfranchised white people, white young males, I would say, because if you look at all these mass murders, they're all young white men. I mean, they're crazy. They've all had mental health problems, and maybe that's where we need to go to. Look at what is happening to these young white males that they feel so much hatred to another race, another culture?
Well, you know what? This is where we disagree, Kathleen, because I think that this is nothing new, as Taboo has mentioned. It's not just about guns. It's about culture. It's about a culture in South Carolina where they still fly the stars and bars. You know, you wouldn't go to New York City and see a swastika on
a flag. But you saw it in Colorado. You've seen these
killings
in Colorado.
I understand. But it's about racism. It's not about what's happening to white young white men, because young white men are doing better, as they always have, than any minority group.
And the
idea, wait a second, and the idea that they're somehow put upon is a real problem.
I'm not saying put upon, and that's not the word I'm using. I'm not saying put upon.
It is a real problem that these guys feel, you know. And this guy in South Carolina was very clear about it, that he felt he had no other choice, that he wanted to start a race war. And I don't get it, because black unemployment is still 2.5 or 3 times what white unemployment is. Opportunities for African Americans are still less. They still make up the poorest parts of our society. White men may have lost some of their power, But we can't cater to that. We can't cater to it because it's a lie.
What do you think, Taboo?
Well, you know, I'm still opening for, but what I don't hear are the secret organizations that we know exist that teaches this. This young man is only 21 years old. Right. What does he know about Rhodesia and all this other stuff? This seems like the same indoctrination that I've heard. Even, you know, Lincoln got killed, what year? We talk so much about the Civil War. But look who killed Lincoln there afterwards. You know, the Civil War, does it still continue? You know, the Knights of the Golden Circle, I don't hear anybody talk about them. You know?
And we know they exist.
Go ahead, Tua.
No, I was just saying, I mean, these are secret organizations, high up, well-established within the government, any of these individuals, but they have their secret power, you know, like the old slaveocracy, you know? Like George Washington refused to accept George Mason's, you know? And he said, we're all born free. Jefferson had to change that, you see? So if we have government, I think it was Webster talked about, we need a guide. If this is our guide, then let's live by it. Let's enforce it. Now, the problem, when we don't do that, then I think that's where we have a problem.
Well, you know, the gun laws, or what are you talking about not enforcing? Taboo.
I'm sorry, say again, I didn't understand you.
You said that we weren't enforcing, and I didn't know if you meant the gun laws, or did you mean something else?
I would go all the way back to, let's say, the formation of the country. You know, all laws, you just can't make any law. Congress cannot just make any law they want. You know, it has to be, law has to be based in something, and it's based on the principles of the founding principles. Now, slavery is totally incompatible with the founding principles. So all of what we have right now, all this is the seeds of the problem, I think. The seeds of all this stuff was in the Constitutional Convention when they allowed slavery to continue. They kicked this thing down the road, they compromised, and we still suffer from the lingering negative effects of it.
Well, and that's politics, isn't it? I mean, you know, when you think back about it, if you read the words of Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson was the most eloquent speaker, in my opinion, most eloquent writer on the rights of man and freedom and what the world should be. And he had a beautiful image of it, but he was also a slave owner. So it shows you, first of all, that you can have this kind of dichotomous view of the world, you know, that in one instant you're embracing equality, but on the other hand, you're keeping it from being implemented. And I think you're right about not understanding the underlying racism that still exists in America, you know.
Can I ask you about, you mentioned Jefferson being such a great writer. Do you think he was a better writer, a greater writer than George Mason, whom he copied the Declaration of Independence from?
Yes.
George Mason wrote
that
all people are born
free. That was my personal opinion. Maybe he wasn't the greatest idea man, but that is my opinion, that he was Shakespeare of his, you know, of those guys. You know, he wrote the Declaration of Independence pretty much and was one of the founding fathers in the Constitution. And he speaks so, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. That's not only beautiful sentiment, it's beautiful syntax. But in addition to that, you know, we all know that he had this cognitive dissonance, right? He was in love with a black woman, is pretty much the conventional wisdom, Sally Hemings, and had several children with him. But he still had slaves, you know, and right. So those two things can exist simultaneously, even though they seem like they're juxtaposed to each other, that they're antithetical, they can, and they are, but they can still exist inside somebody. And I think that, you know, we still see this today. When I was at the DNC in charge of direct mail, our number one consultant was a guy that started a thing called Klan Watch, and they're still in existence today. Because in the 1970s and the 1980s, when I was at DNC, we thought that the Klan was a thing of the past, but it wasn't a thing of the past. And this guy uncovered that. Until this day, they still watch what Klan activity is and anti-Semitic activity. And, you know, we have a lot. We still have that in our culture. I think, and again, this is my personal opinion, half of the stuff that Obama gets blamed for by America, he gets blamed for because he's black. I think if you were white, the criticism would be different. You know, maybe not less criticism for the right, but it would be different.
I'm sorry. Is it not because of that same teachings that this is a white man's country and don't teach properly? And that's why a lot of the young people like this man believe that. As he said, blacks are raping and women taking. Who is teaching him that? Where is it coming from? This is the same stuff that I heard years ago. So the secret organization that we all know still exists, we don't talk about it, though. And we know where a lot of it's coming from.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, where do you think, do you think these secret organizations are like, we're talking about the Ku Klux Klan and the Aryan Nation, right? I mean, those are the ones I know
necessarily
about.
Not necessarily them alone.
That there's others, like broken off groups from those kinds.
Let's look at our Masons. Let's look at the Masons. Masons are supposed to be able to go into each other's lodges and everything. There's some white lodges, black mates, they will not allow in. A lot of that stuff is still taught. This is a white man country and on down the road. Now, let the Masons, they're supposed to be good brothers and manly kind, let them speak the truth. We know I'm sure you know. Other folk know, too.
Well, at Elks Lodge, and it's just, you know, at the Elks Lodge was just what I gather, like, are part of the Masons also. I know growing up that they did not allow any Mexicans in there. And my mother's side of the family is from Missouri, white. My dad's Mexican. And they were very big generals. They were like, I don't know, 3 or 4 star generals in the Mason network. And they were shocked, they told me, because I had been thrown out. I had been asked to go with this family when I was about 14, 15, and they threw me out, which I'll never forget. So, you know, it's funny because when you look at me, if you meet me, you would not think I would have the stories. I mean, I've been thrown out of restaurants because they wouldn't serve my father because he was Mexican. I, you know, was thrown out of all kinds of places because I had Mexican blood in me. So I understand what being denied is, but it's interesting that it can also be regional. And I don't know where the Masons are. I mean, they were a huge organization. You don't hear about them as much today as you did maybe 20 or 30 years ago, but I gather they're still operating.
Oh, yeah. They operate a big children's hospital and a burn hospital. They're not as active in certain parts of the country, but they're still out there and they're still active. And you know what? Now that we have Taboo on the phone, this is a question that I really want to ask him. What about this lady from Seattle, Rachel Dolezal? Is that how you pronounce her last name? Who was the NAACP activist who is really a white woman, but identifies as black. Do you know about this, Taboo?
I do. Well, look.
And what do you think about that situation?
Well, who is to determine her identity? In America, you identify yourself. Now, as far as black people are concerned, black Americans have white folk in our family. We always have.
Yes.
Now the question is, do a DNA. Who knows what she feels? Who am I or anyone else?
She has two African-American children, clearly African-American children. She was married to an African-American. I mean, you know, yes, I agree with you 100%.
Let's look biologically.
Yep.
If you were to do a DNA of her and her mom and dad, and I would suggest anyone do that, see what you not find, most likely some Native in her or some black in her or, you know, black were fighting words for our people at one time. We didn't start calling us, we weren't called African Americans until recently. you know. Right. So our people, you got to keep in mind, 1619, you had Africans that went to Jamestown, which became the model for the rest of the colonies in many ways. You had that blend of the native, the white, and the African, which really made this country. How many years, 100 years later, 1776, when the country started, this was a new people made up of all these three primary groups. We are a new gene pool of people. We are a new country, the new world, a new people, a new ideology, this thing called freedom. But there were some people who were not let go. But most of all, it was slavery, which had existed as long as mankind. But this country said, no, we need to free ourselves of slavery. But there were certain people who said no. The rich, the slavocracy, you know, which controlled the government for a long time. That power still exists to a great degree, I believe.
Well, and those people that said, you know, we have to be honest as white people, too. Those people who said slavery is wrong were mostly from the North, where the slaves didn't play a role in their, you know, much of a role in their economic survival anymore. And the people in the South that, you know, they thought that whether it was true or not, they thought their economic survival depended on slavery. So those that came to church, as we used to say, you know, those that came to God on the basis of practicality, not on some great moral, you know, not on some great moral idea that this is something that needed to be resolved. And I feel a little empathy for this woman, because I grew up in an Italian family. My grandparents were Italian, and my grandmother was from a border town, you know, up near Switzerland, and she was blonde hair and blue-eyed. Well, she didn't speak Italian to anybody. If you could speak any other language, she wouldn't speak Italian. If you called her Italian, she would say she was an American, because she could pass. She could pass because she was blue-eyed and blonde hair. She didn't look Italian, you know. And my mom changed her name to get her first job. My mom, who today would be 102 if she was still alive, she changed her last name to get her first job because they weren't hiring Italians in Newark. So this idea that, you know, we all you talk about having mixed blood, which is true, but we also have, regardless of who you are, I think many, many people have done this to get.
And let me throw this into it too. My great grandmother was Yaqui Indian. The Apaches were the rulers of the Indian. I mean, they were the feared. And they would raid small towns and grab the kids and make them slaves. My great-grandmother was stolen from her village to be a slave and lived with the Apaches for about 3 or 4 years before her family came back and stole her back. So even in Indian tribes, the different Indian nations, they use slavery. You know, and it's something that, you know, while I was growing up, everybody was like, ooh, you know, they don't want to talk about it. But, you know, slavery happens in a lot and in many places.
Well, right, but the good man's inhumanity to man is still going on in the world. You know, I mean, yeah, always. I don't know that there's a culture, although the American culture was one of the last to get rid of it. I don't know that there is a culture that doesn't have slavery in its history somewhere. But, yeah, I think, you know, just to bring this full circle back to what we were talking about, it's not just guns that does it. And you make that point, Tabu, and I think it's a good point that it's also a culture that supports some of the ideas and allows – you know, it's one of the downsides of freedom of speech, right? You got to listen to the bad guys as well as the good guys. But, yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with our culture. And, you know, when I was a kid, there were a lot of guns around. Nobody walked into churches that I remember and shot a dozen people. Nobody walked into a movie theater and took out everybody. Nobody, you know, did the kind of things we've seen at Virginia Tech and at other places around the country. This, I think, is a new phenomenon, and I think it has a lot to do with our culture, everything from violence on TV.
Do you hold the parents? Do you send them to jail? Because obviously there was, you know, and a lot of the couple of mass murders that have happened, you know, the family knew, like the mother who, you know, had all the automatic guns when her son took them into the school and was it in Connecticut, I forget the state, and killed all his children.
Yeah, even though he was mentally disturbed. I mean, right. She understood that he had mental problems and hoped that the guns would help him straighten out somewhere. I don't know. I think in that case, in Connecticut, you might have held the mother responsible, but of course, she was held responsible by the son because she was the first one he murdered.
Sure.
So she paid the price for that. Well, you know, we're getting towards the end of the show. Thank you so much for calling in, Taboo.
You're our caller of the month. Go ahead.
Yes.
Listen, when we do all of this damage, and I'm hearing people talk about healing, we need to heal. Well, you know, you really don't heal until you repair the damages. If you're in a car accident, you break your bones and all that stuff, you got to repair. You got to reset the bones. You got to sew up and then let it heal. You see, we don't want to repair the damages. Until we do, we're going to, I think, in my opinion, continue to have the same problem.
I agree.
Well, much in your
life. Yeah. I think that's the last word on this particular subject, and it's a good one, Taboo. Thank you. I think you're right. We have to repair the damage. Well, we're going to move on, and thanks for calling in, and we'll talk to you again soon, I hope. Thanks. Anything you want to say, Kathleen? We picked a song for Father's Day. I guess we'll play it going out because we've had this good discussion with Taboo and
yes, he's great. I love Taboo.
Running out of time. Yeah, and we're running out of time.
Oh,
so,
he's really good.
What else do you want to talk about? You got anything else? Because you're always accusing me.
You always give me like a few minutes, right? You give me the last few minutes. I can't possibly say all that I want to say. I do want to say something. Yesterday, I was fortunate to attend a father's lunch that Vincent Orange put on at Tommy Chang's. And one of the things that I was so thrilled about is that I ran into a longtime hero of mine, Ron Dellums, who was the congressman from California. And he came in during the I don't know what they used to call them, I guess they called them the anti-war group, you know, that it was like 1972, that Pat Schroeder, Ron Dellums, this kind of new group of young legislators came in, and I think basically it was a wave against the Vietnam War. And I just want to say that it was incredible to see him again. He looks as good as he did back then, white hair, but, you know, full head of hair. And I just admired him so much. He was such an eloquent speaker. He was such a good guy and so easy to work with in his office. And so it was just such a treat for me after maybe about 30 years to see him after all that time and talk to him about Pat Schroeder and who I used to work for. And it was just really nice. It was a really nice luncheon. Vincent Orange did a great job. And maybe you want to tell about who he honored, right?
Well, let me just say that you certainly knew this man better than I did. For me, I admired him from afar because he was a man of principle. And that's something that disturbs me, that we find less and less people that elected officials that stand on their principle and always stand on their principles. And, you know, I'm a Democrat, always been a Democrat, bleed Democrat blue. But there was another man from Arizona named Barry Goldwater, who I never agreed with, who I also admired for exactly the same reason. Because if you look at where Barry Goldwater stood when he entered Congress and you look where he stood when he left Congress, you can see common thread through everything. He was a man of principle, and certainly we still have some on Capitol Hill.
Very many.
But I don't think we have enough.
And one thing about Goldwater, towards the end, he was agreeing with a woman's right to choose. So one thing I admire about Goldwater is that he would change his mind, and it didn't frighten him if it was against, you know, the Republican Party. He did what he thought was best.
Okay, well, I agree with that, and that's what I'm talking about. His wasn't his position so much as his principles. They right. ran through everything he did. And we're going to play a song going out tonight, a classic by Cat Stevens called Father and Son, about mm-hmm. the struggle between fathers and sons. And let me say, just finish by saying, Happy Father's Day to all the men out there. You're important in the lives of your sons and daughters. And as Kathleen has already pointed out, and Vincent pointed out yesterday, if you already raised some children, go out there and raise some more. Go to a boys club. Go to some place where children need to be mentored, because fathers are important. We'll see you next week. Here's a classic song from Cat Stevens.
It's not time to make a change. Just relax, take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down.